And I think everybody knows this, but they may not be conscious of it, that the big tech platforms, and we're talking about Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, they are trillion-dollar market cap enterprises, multi-trillion. And they have one major asset that they exploit, which is individuals' personal data. When you think about it, Google's worth almost $2 trillion, and their biggest asset is your data. And individuals don't get a piece of this. They don't get a cut of the hundreds of billions that Google makes by being able to use your personal data to service advertisers. And it's not right. It's not fair. Web3, the whole next generation of the internet, is going to change, where data is truly becomes the individual's property.
Just stop it. The run-of-the-mill, cheesy, humdrum bullshit status quo just tires me out. What fascinates me are the industry disruptors, the superhuman frontiersmen or women with arrows in their backs who go through hell to achieve their goals. They'll go through anything to make it. They bathe in hell and high water, a cut above. They're intolerant to mediocrity, the status quo, and yet they're the nicest people you'll ever meet. This is Disruption Interruption. Join me as we meet and learn from those mavericks, rebels, and business leaders that aren't afraid to piss off the establishment in order to make radical change for good. This show is sponsored by Johto PR, the disruptive anti-PR firm that murders your competition with cinder blocks and cyanide. Welcome back, everybody, to Disruption Interruption. I'm your host, KJ, and we're here today to talk to another industry leader that has steered off the lame, tired path of the status quo. Now, today, we have a true industry trailblazer whose impact spans technology, media, and finance. You guys know I'm going to love this. With a track record that includes founding and exiting 5 startups, our guest has been a driving force in shaping the landscape of digital asset management and cryptocurrency hedge funds. He's an early visionary using big data for targeted permission-based advertising, and his venture achieved a successful 9-figure sale to Hearst. He's graced global stages as a keynote speaker, such events by South by Southwest, and his expertise extends beyond entrepreneurship. He's been quoted and featured in reputable outlets like CNN, Forbes, and CoinDesk. But why we're talking to him today is he's leading the charge in revolutionizing digital advertising. He's at the forefront of permission-based advertising to empower individuals to own and monetize their own data securely. That's a mouthful. Join us in welcoming the founder and CEO of Permission.io, Charlie Silver.
Thanks for having me, KJ. It's my pleasure to be here.
You're so welcome. Well, we're talking about something really disruptive. We're talking about something that's changing a lot. It's probably long-term disagreements. But before we dive into this, you know, what's driven you? What's your fundamental ingredient for disruptive innovation?
Well, KJ, it's a good question. You know, when I think about it, I was born with this. I was born with a chip on my shoulder, you know, where I always feel like the status quo is riddled with problems and there could be better ways of doing things. And I'm also have a very strong sense of justice. And when I see big institutions exploiting individuals, you know, it gets me fired up and I want to fight back.
You know, that's awesome. And from talking to you, I know that all of those things definitely define you. And I love it about disruptors because you can have a chip on your shoulder and use that for the greater good, which I absolutely love.
Well, that's what drives me. And this particular enterprise that I've been working on for several years is kind of the epitome of my life's work, because we're up against the biggest institutions in the world.
That's awesome. The fact that you're able to bring it all to this point of your life's work, and you mentioned biggest institutions, right? Exploiting data or people. Like, tell us more about that, because this fits into your whole ecosystem.
Right. Well, I've been in digital advertising and finance for 25 years. And I think everybody knows this, but they may not be conscious of it, that the big tech platforms, and we're talking about Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, they are trillion-dollar market cap enterprises, multi-trillion. And they have one major asset that they exploit, which is individuals' personal data. When you think about it, Google's worth almost $2 trillion, and their biggest asset is your data. And individuals don't get a piece of this. They don't get a cut of the hundreds of billions that Google makes by being able to use your personal data to service advertisers. And it's not right. It's not fair. Web3, the whole next generation of the internet, is going to change, where data is truly becomes the individual's property. And that ownership of that data and deciding who gets to use it is going to be based on who's willing to compensate people. And that's what we're doing. We're building all the infrastructure to enable an advertiser to give an individual value in exchange for the use of their data. And that's going to be the whole next generation of the internet. And I'm super excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, me too. Let's just recap, because some of our guys know this, but I'd really like to dig in the pain points here. Before we get into like building the infrastructure, I want to see what that's like. But what is the good, the bad, the ugly of Google and these other enterprises owning all this data? Because in the beginning, we didn't care. We didn't give a shit. Why do we care now?
Well, I think everybody has experienced that they sent an email to someone about, hey, I need a new barbecue. And then all of a sudden they start seeing ads for barbecue. That Google's reading my emails, which they are, and that you have a conversation on Facebook with a friend about going to a baseball game or a concert. And then all of a sudden you start seeing ads about concerts. And these platforms know more about you than you know about yourself. They can predict what you're likely to want to buy based on your conversations, based on your emails, based on what websites you visit. And these algorithms and machine learning capabilities are so sophisticated that they can predict what you're likely to do and what you're likely to buy. And it's mind-boggling just how much these platforms know about you and how much they can earn off that knowledge, and you don't receive anything. And it's just...
it's creepy.
It's really creepy.
It's creepy. I mean, you know, you mentioned that, and I remember speaking with someone who is really active on Instagram. He goes into a new area and he meets new people. He doesn't connect with them on Instagram, but all of a sudden, the algorithm shows all these people that he was just around to connect with. It's creepy how that follows a person. What's the danger of that? I think people are starting to get it, but I don't think they fully duplicate the ramifications.
Well, that's right. And the internet is going to change. And I think it's going to change for the better. The core principle is that individuals will have to give explicit permission for their data to be used. And that is happening around the globe. Europe is the most deep into this, where there's a set of regulations called GDPR, Global Data Protection Regulations, where Facebook and Google have been fined billions in Europe. And they don't care. They just keep doing it. Asia has also embraced GDPR. And then California and 12 other states just are enforcing now, well, what's called the California Privacy Rights Act, which is very similar to GDPR. Of course, on the federal level, the U.S. does not have data regulations, but it's all built around individuals have to give explicit consent in order for their data to be used. And it really is going to change. And I think it's going to change for the better.
Yeah, you know, it brings me back to this injustice thing that you mentioned. In order for all these changes, like we know government doesn't get involved unless there's this pent-up demand or the people are pissed off about something, right? Government is a slow boat to China. By the time they get involved, things have gone past the point of being acceptable to people. What has been happening as far as like the outcry of people and starting to recognize that their data is being used or misused?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate. And you mentioned when government acts. Look at our government is similar to private enterprise. It's a pay to play. Who pays? I mean, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon, they write big checks to politicians on the federal level. So those politicians are not going to fight that cash stream. So it's happening on the state level.
Why do you think it's so different over there in Europe? Because they're really harsh on this.
You know, it's just a different culture. It's a different way of operating. And I'm not saying, you know, one system's better than the other, but the fact is, I mean, there's clear recognition that the data exploitation, and that's what we call it, exploitation, has gotten extreme. Extreme.
Yeah.
Essentially, the next generation of the internet is going to recognize that data is real property. It's a real asset. And that the individual who owns the data should be compensated for its use, or they shouldn't grant permission.
It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that. It's like your property. I mean, your yard. Imagine you owned a farm and somebody said, hey, we're going to start drilling for oil and not compensate you. You know, it's the same principle.
Yeah, it is the same principle. You know, you said you're building the infrastructure for this. Like, how does that look? Because it's not just going to happen overnight.
No, and we've been very early, but it's okay because we've really gotten more and more sophisticated on how this works. It starts with a reward. You know, how does an advertiser reward an individual for their data? And we've developed a cryptocurrency, or what you can call a digital asset that an advertiser can offer to a user. And that asset is called ASK, the ticker ASK. It's been publicly traded on crypto exchanges for 2 years. So now an advertiser can ask, use that digital asset, ask, to compensate users for their data. They have the ability to accept it. That's a whole, you know, set of challenges. So it starts by someone going to permission.io, opening an account, setting up a wallet. But the real issue for all of this to go mainstream, and you're too young to remember the Netscape moment in 1996, when the only people on the internet were people who had to pay AOL or CompuServe or Prodigy $30 a month to use the internet.
Was that the dial-up?
Yeah. But then Netscape came out in 1996, which was a browser that enabled anybody with a device to get on the internet, you know, at no charge. And then it was literally overnight that hundreds of millions of people around the world got on the internet and started having email. I remember before Netscape, I'd ask people for their email address and they go, what the hell is email? And I go, oh, never mind. But then when Netscape came out, everybody within a year had an email. And it's going to be the same with wallet addresses.
That's really interesting.
Right. Wallet addresses are going to replace email. So if I said, send me some Bitcoin, charliesilver.eth, that's my wallet address. Just, it sounds just like an email. It's a Web3 domain and that runs on a blockchain. And everybody's going to have a Web3 domain wallet address. And it's going to replace email. So you're going to be kj.bitcoin. And that's going to be your wallet. And that's what's going to serve to log into websites and enable advertiser to send you an NFT or ASK or Bitcoin or anything. And that's as soon as everybody has a wallet address, like an email, that's when this thing totally explodes in the internet. And Web3, what people like to call Web3, goes mainstream.
Yeah, you actually connected the dots for me on that with the wallet. What would be the benefit of signing up for a wallet now?
Well, you have a wallet. I mean, it's like, what's the benefit of having a bank account?
That's right. Okay.
Having a wallet enables you to trade, collect, pay. I really do believe that cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and other legitimate digital asset cryptocurrencies are going to be the currency of how stuff works on the internet. And you're going to pay for stuff online via cryptocurrency. And I'm not saying dollars are going away. Dollars aren't going away. But digital assets, digital currencies are going to be what's used online.
Yeah, I could see that. And how does that actually relate and connect to dollars? That's been a burning question that I hear people ask. Yeah, I mean, digital currency, and they say, I think I get it, but how does that relate to me monetizing that in real money, they call it?
Listen, I'll call Bitcoin real money versus a dollar. If you have $100,000, I'd rather put it in Bitcoin than put it in the bank account or a treasury bill. You know, I think Bitcoin is much better money than dollars. And, you know, I'm happy to talk about why.
Yeah, please, because I think our listeners have those questions. And some of them are a bit shy to ask.
All right, well, let's talk about, if I ask somebody, what is a dollar? Most people don't really understand what a dollar is. A dollar is a piece of paper that the Federal Reserve, which is an independent bank, that's the bank that has the monopoly to print money, just prints. And it prints it based on the government's needs. And what does the Federal Reserve do with it? It buys treasury bills. It buys U.S. government debt. And it's a Ponzi scheme beyond Ponzi scheme. And how it continues to survive, it baffles me how people trust what a U.S. dollar. There's nothing that backs it. Tax receipts don't back a dollar. Nothing backs it. It's just this piece of paper.
It's just an idea backed by confidence. That's it.
And well, it's really backed by the U.S. military, because we've had this ability to have the global currency that originally was backed by gold. After World War II, and the United States became the superpower, we had all the gold in the world. And there was this thing called the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944, where we said the dollar is going to become the global reserve currency. And it was the only currency backed by gold. Everybody said, okay.
And that put a lot of confidence in the dollar at that time.
Right. But then after going through the 60s and Vietnam, Charles de Gaulle in France says, you know what? I don't like these dollars. The United States is out of control. They're spending on the military and social programs. And they started turning in their dollars for gold. And we went from 26,000 tons of gold in our possession down to 8,000 tons, a dramatic decrease. Led by Charles de Gaulle in France, governments around the world started turning their dollars and wanted gold. Nixon in 1971 said, no more, defaulted on the world and said, nope, the dollar is no longer convertible into gold. We defaulted on the world, and that led to the inflation in the 1970s. But then Paul Volcker came in, raised interest rates up to 20%. He kind of saved the dollar. And in combination, Saudi Arabia and the oil-producing countries in the Middle East, we made a deal with them. As long as you continue to price oil in dollars, we'll protect you. And that's the deal we made with the Saudis. And you've heard the term the petrodollar.
Yeah.
That's petrodollar is. And so we said, we'll protect Saudi Arabia. You just keep pricing oil in dollars. And so that keeps a demand around the world for dollars, right? So this game's been played for 40, 50 years. And actually, now you can ask yourself, we're getting into geopolitics, why is Putin an enemy? Why is Russia an enemy? They're not really an enemy militarily. They're an enemy by the U.S. government because they're challenging the petrodollar. They're saying, you know what? We're going to price our oil in rubles and yuan and trying to coax the Saudis to get rid of the petrodollar. That's why Putin is considered an enemy, not because of any kind of military threat, because he's threatening the petrodollar. And as soon as that petrodollar breaks, watch what happens. If you think we have bad inflation now, it's coming like you can't even believe.
Once the petrodollar breaks, that loses the confidence, and then boom, the dollar won't be worth much.
Exactly. Now circle back to Bitcoin. Nobody controls it. It's totally decentralized. There's a finite amount that can ever be created, 21 million, where there's dollars just get printed based on a whim. And there's a finite number of Bitcoin. It's totally decentralized. No government can control it. And that's why it just continues to rise in value. I mean, I'm one of these people who believe Bitcoin will be $1 million of Bitcoin. It will become a global reserve asset. And because the other big problem of the US dollar is if we don't like your policies, and there are 26 countries around the world that are under US sanctions, we take your money. The Russians had $600 billion in US Treasury assets, and we confiscated them because we don't like Russia. And it's like, really?
You know, it's a really interesting, not only history lesson, but a connection of dots to Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and how that relates just to the average end user, having that data and understanding that. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about the period to come. I think the world is becoming a better place, even though we've kind of hit rock bottom in all kinds of trust and institutions. But I think there are things in place like Web3, Bitcoin, that are really going to promote individual rights. And, you know, I'm very positive about that.
Yeah. You talk about, you know, what will happen with these companies with that own all of this data? It seems to me like they are going to have to be even the vanguards for this in the future.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you, you know, because I'm so deep in the industry. Amazon, for example. Let's talk about Amazon. Amazon, 5 years ago, didn't have an advertising business. You know what Amazon's advertising business is today? It's going to be $80 billion in 2024. They're going to be almost as big as Facebook. Why has Amazon gone from zero to $80 billion? Think about that. In 5 years, because they have everybody's data. In the US alone, they have 150 million accounts. They not only have your credit card information, they have all your purchasing information. Think about that data, how valuable it is. If you're somebody who wants to sell something, Amazon is a better buy than Google or Facebook. They have better data. Amazon does not, even though they have big e-commerce operations in Europe, they don't run their advertising business in Europe because of GDPR. They can't. They don't want to take the fines. They don't want the hassle from the European regulators.
Interesting.
They don't even run their ad business in Europe and in Asia. It's a US business only.
So what's going to happen with these companies? So now they're going to have to, like, now we can monetize our data.
Well, not yet. I mean, Google is, you know, they have more data than anybody, but we're a partner of Google, by the way.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Google sees permission as a strategic partner, and we are, because they know what's coming and they want to support our efforts. We're an official web, what's called an official Web3 partner of Google. We use a lot of Google infrastructure. On permission.io, we have a search engine, which is, you know, essentially an API from Google, but without any of the Google ads. So we can service our users. They can search privately and only share their data with advertisers to compensate them.
Mm-hmm. This made me think of it. How does this relate to ChatGPT and AI and other things like that?
Well, excellent point. There are hundreds of lawsuits right now. If you think about what ChatGPT is, these crawlers that go around the web and you ask them, what's the best shoes for hiking? And they'll gather stuff and then give you a response. But they're scraping content that doesn't belong to them and they don't have copyrights to. So there's going to be copyright disputes with ChatGPT and these generative AI tools for decades. There's already hundreds of lawsuits filed. Those ChatGPT tools are going to have to ask permission to use content.
So they're going to also have to not reimburse, but they're also going to have to pay for data.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So the final end product, let's go into the future. The ideal thing, what does this look like? It's Web 3.0. It's decentralized. People are going to have to give permission to give their data. So their data is protected. These guys have wallets. Walk it back. What has to happen in our society, in the web, with these data companies to get up to that point?
Like most major innovations, they happen slowly, then all at once, right? Yeah. And it's happening slowly now. In America alone, it's estimated 35 million people own digital assets. They own crypto. So that means they have a wallet, okay? 35 million. That's not a small number.
It's not a small number at all.
So it is happening. You know, people can look at the headlines every day and watch Bitcoin. One of the criticisms of Bitcoin is it's volatile. What isn't volatile? In every asset, every stock, bond, real estate, it's all volatile.
Well, you've been in the media for so long. You know that those stories, they want to exploit the controversy. It just, you have to be in control of your narrative, right?
Right. I mean, people have to think for themselves.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the content that you're fed on major media is just government media. It's not independent thinking. It's just whatever the government wants to feed you. I mean, all the major television networks, newspapers, radio, et cetera. You have to go to independent sources to really find out real facts.
It's so very true. So I guess the first step is just more and more people need to get wallets.
Right. And that's going to happen when the United States government has clear regulation. Because of the ambiguous regulation in the U.S. around crypto and digital assets, it's not illegal. It's just, it's not clear what is legal, right? And so enterprises are staying away. Although Fidelity, BlackRock, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, they're all in it. They're all in it super deep. We just had a Bitcoin ETF approved, although begrudgingly. The SEC has all kinds of lawsuits with Coinbase and Ripple going on. And I could tell you why the SEC is so compromised. It's ridiculous. But
I'm familiar a little bit. I mean, what would you tell our listeners based on that?
Well, why the SEC is compromised?
Yeah.
Well, Gary Gensler, who's the chairman of the SEC, was very close and was the advisor to a guy named Sam Bankman-Fried, who was the biggest in 2020, who was the founder and creator of the exchange FTX that went bust. And so Gensler is trying to distance himself from that experience. But Gensler was Biden's finance chair. Sam Bankman-Fried donated over $90 million to Democrats and to Biden's campaign, was the biggest single, next to George Soros, was the second biggest contributor to the Biden campaign. Gensler was the finance chair, and he was totally in bed with Sam Bankman-Fried and advising him. And now, and I'm not saying Gensler was involved with the destruction of FTX, but you know, he was very close to him, and he's trying to distance himself.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I could talk to you for hours about all of this, but let's get back to, you said when there is clear regulation.
Right.
When do you think that will be? And what kind of hurdle is that?
I think it's happening. I mean, with the Bitcoin ETF, the SEC has lost every lawsuit against Coinbase, and the courts are definitely ruling that digital assets and digital currencies or cryptocurrencies, you know, those are all synonymous, are a different asset class than traditional securities. And that's what the SEC is saying, is that Bitcoin or Ethereum or ASK is just a security. And the courts have ruled no, digital assets is a unique asset class and require their own unique set of rules. So I don't know, it's playing out right now and maybe another year. I don't think it's going to be more than a year. It may.
I don't think it can be, you know, much longer. I mean, technology is moving so fast today and things are changing. Like, every 90 days, there's a huge change. And so things that were took a long time before now aren't taking as long.
And here's even more evidence that we're going to get digital asset regulation. I mean, the major jurisdictions in the world, the major financial jurisdictions, Singapore, Switzerland, London, Tokyo, all have clear regulation. So let me tell you this. I mean, I'm an insider in the business. I can't tell you how the best brains in the U.S. are moving to these jurisdictions. And there's a brain drain. So do we really want the most innovative tech and financial people moving to Singapore and Tokyo and London? And that's what's happening.
What do you think is needed to change that or keep these guys here?
Well, again, we just need clear rules around these things. And I do think it's happening because, you know, who really calls the shots are the JP Morgans, Fidelity, Goldman Sachs of the world. And they're saying we need this.
Yeah, you're right. Any type of disruption and innovation needs a heavy amount of education. I mean, this is what we're doing here. Something that you're so entrenched in and having to like really explain it in simplicity terms for people to understand. What do you think the biggest education hurdles are about Web 3.0, permission-based advertising, cryptocurrency? What do you think needs to be communicated over and over to get the light bulb go off?
You know, you surf around the web. You see this thing that says cookie consent, accept cookies, and you go 50%.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
And I'll say yes, 50 say no. But now imagine that cookie consent, which is just essentially, can we use your data? Can we track you when you surf around the web? Cookies are going away. Imagine now an ask permission banner where it's like, here's 500 ASK. Can we use your data? And there's a little tab that says, what's this? You click on it and say, ASK is a cryptocurrency. If you have a wallet, enter it here. But if you don't, here's how you get a wallet. So that's kind of like, just got
to have the education that needs to happen. It needs to happen over and over and over in a variety of ways because there's all kinds of different people. Tell me this, will people in the future be able to negotiate? Like, no, I don't want 500 ASK. I want 900.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And they'll have to be thresholds that these companies have and algorithms to build that.
Exactly.
Charlie, you're creating a lot of new jobs with this too. You know that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's cliche to say that data is the new oil, but it's absolutely true. Oil was the major commodity that allowed the world to industrialize. Now we're in this information economy. Data is the fuel for all of it, right?
Yeah. And you know, that data is the new oil, that cliche you're talking about, that's really been only like connotated with business. But people, consumers, you know, you and me, haven't really known the implications of that. But it's like their personal data is now the new oil.
Right. You wouldn't believe just how big the information data economy is and how data really rules and runs so much of the economy. And you're already seeing rewards for data. I mean, think about Hilton Rewards or Marriott Bonvoy or the airlines or the credit cards. They give out rewards points. And essentially, it's for your personal data.
Mm-hmm. It's so very true. Capital One started that. Every time you shop, they have an extension on the browser, and then they can go, hey, if you're buying this, go to here to our partners. You get saved money, but they're getting your data. People don't realize that they're giving away that.
But those rewards, although with the right idea that you should get value in exchange for your engagement and your data, it's analog stuff. It's only useful in a very narrow walled garden. And that's where digital assets, by making these things digital, makes it global, tradable, liquid. It has a market. So that's why all of those rewards programs will be digital assets, will go digital.
Oh, that is so fascinating. So in a nutshell, what's your elevator pitch so people really understand Permission.io?
Well, permission is dedicated to allowing people to own their data and earn from it, period. That's what we do. Very simple. We provide the vehicles for people to own and monetize their data.
Got it. And in order for anything to get accepted and go expand and exponentially grow, you've got to get a lot of people doing it. So what's the first step? Go and sign up for a wallet. Get a wallet.
Go to permission.io, create an account. You know, it's just a simple profile that just by doing that, you earn crypto. You don't have to send money to Coinbase. You can go to permission.io, set up an account. You get paid ASK for doing so. And then you can search the web. like you would on Google. And as ads pop up, you can earn, if you want to opt in and share your data with that particular advertiser, you can earn crypto.
Yeah. And for those that are very interested in this, this would be good for them to get in early.
Yeah.
I would think.
No, absolutely. And now we give people a wallet, but it's an old style 16 character wallet. But we will be offering a Web3 domain like kj.ask.
And when is that coming?
Hopefully sooner than later, a couple months.
Okay. But if people create an account, then they would be able to be educated and updated on this.
Yes, absolutely. But they still get a wallet, but we want to give them a wallet that's similar to an email address.
Yeah, I love it.
And those costs, like there's location, you know, places like Ethereum naming service, unstoppable domains that you can buy a domain for like $8, but that's going to come down and it's going to be offered for no charge.
Yeah. So maybe people just wait till that's offered by Permission.io, right?
Exactly.
Cool. Okay. Charlie, what do you do outside of Permission.io? Do you have any like crazy passions or fun things that you like to do?
No. No, I mean, I work out, I read, I hang out with kids.
But this is your labor of love, your passion of love.
I've gotten rid of golf. I used to play a lot of golf. There's not enough time to play golf.
Yeah, I absolutely love that about disruptors. They love what they do so much. Okay, so how do people get a hold of you, Charlie?
You can follow me on Twitter at Charlie Silver or Charlie H. Silver. I'm on LinkedIn. And you know what? Send me an email, csilver@permission.io.
Okay, guys, you heard from Charlie. Contact him if you have any questions about cryptocurrency, permission-based advertising. Contact him. And Charlie, food for thought. What is something you want to leave our listeners with before we end off?
That it's always darkest before the dawn. As Americans, I think we've lost a lot of trust in institutions. You know, it's called the social contract. I mean, the last 6-7 years have been really a period of like distrust in institutions. But I think the world's going to become a better place. I'm very optimistic.
That's awesome. Paint your own canvas. Do something about it. All right, that's a wrap, everyone. If you learned something today, tell someone about this podcast and tell people to go disrupt their markets with a tidbit from this show. Thanks for listening to Disruption Interruption, where we transform lives, change consumer behavior, alter economics and data, and never accept the status quo. Ciao for now. Because we live in a highly litigious society, with America being one of the top litigious countries in the world, here's our legal disclaimer. This advice is not intended to be a substitute for professional public relations or legal advice. Do not disregard seeking professional legal healthcare or financial advice, or delay seeking professional PR or legal advice because of something you have heard here. Contact an attorney to obtain advice on any particular legal issue or problem. Use of this podcast or our website or any of its social media or email links do not create an agency-client relationship between JotoPR and the user.